So I'm going to talk about something very different from most of the previous talks, but my talk's going to be, the topic is probably most similar to that by Gerhard earlier on this conference. I'll talk about determinism and quantum theory inside black holes. So the connection with the conference is that what I'm doing is very simple. So that's the simplicity part, hopefully. And I think it points to a simple interplay between quantum theory and general relativity, which I think is interesting and new. So any discussion of black holes will have to begin with the Schwarzschild black hole, which I'm sure you will have seen. This Penrose diagram looks like this. This is the eternal Schwarzschild black hole. The metric is minus f of r dt squared plus r squared f of r plus r squared d omega squared, where f is this function m to m over r. There's a surface called the horizon. There's a singularity, and there's various infinities. And r plus is where f vanishes. Now, let me say right away that realistic, as you would probably know from your GR class, is a space-time where the left side is covered up by a collapsing piece of matter. So the only thing I'm going to say is that if you have an observer which happens to decide to go into the black hole, A, then she will end her existence in this space-like singularity where tidal forces are infinite. So in this sense, so obviously we don't know what's going to happen at this terminal singularity, but at least there's no issue for determinism. You just die, and that's it. In some sense, that's a firm prediction. Now, let me say also that, say sort of differently from the point of view of partial differential equations, if you have a field like the wave equation, then it will suffice to, in order to specify the dynamics of this field, it will suffice to give on this surface, sigma, the field and its first derivative, first time derivative, and then this wave equation will uniquely specify what the field is towards the future and past. Usually we're interested in the future for reasons that are sort of difficult to explain, really. So there's, that's the mathematician's version of determinism. I'll just repeat that. For the mathematician, the partial differential equations mathematician, it just means you can find a surface, and then if you give the initial data for your equation, which in turn the wave equation is the field and its first derivative, its velocity, then the domain of the dependence, which is the space-time, part of the space-time where this solution is unique, is the entire space-time. That's the mathematician's version of determinism, and it's obviously true here. Okay, so that's that. Now, there's another space-time that's interesting, which is by the way, this talk will be mostly pictures. I hope that's okay with you. There are some certain formulas behind, but I don't think you want to know about that. Anyway, so the more realistic case is, of course, the Kerr metric, which, unlike this metric, describes a rotating black hole. So the Kerr metric is a little complicated. So I'll, for the purposes of this talk, it will be entirely sufficient to consider another metric, which isn't the Kerr, but which is so-called Reisner-Nordström metric. It has the only slight difference is that f of r is now 1 minus 2m on r plus q squared over r squared. And it describes a charged black hole. So you have not only a metric, but you have a Maxwell, a static Maxwell field as well. And its Penrose diagram looks something like this. So it's bigger. I'm just drawing the relevant portion of the Penrose diagram here, something like this. And region, if I call this region one corresponds to this one. So this is not a Feynman diagram, it's a Penrose diagram. And so this is what you call future infinity. There's a horizon here and a horizon there. Now, so this is the exterior and the space-time diagram continues down here. That's not so important. So the interesting new feature, as you see from this diagram, is that it now has a more interesting interior. Yeah? So this is the black hole region. But so an observer going this way may now continue further into this region here before it hits the singularity, which is a kind of time-like singularity. I mean, I assume you're able to read these kinds of diagrams, even though maybe you have a background in particle physics. It's a spherically symmetric metric, so you can always, every point is a sphere, and the angular coordinates are sort of less interesting, so they're suppressed in this diagram, and light rays basically go at 45 degrees. Anyway, so what's the problem here? Now, the problem is, if you now draw a surface like this, and you consider like a wave equation, you could also consider Maxwell's equation, or you could consider the full Einstein equations, then the region where the evolution of this field is determined is only this. So now beyond this region which exists, this equation doesn't tell you what the field should be up here. So now that's for the mathematician and for the physicist a breakdown of determinism, because you could continue this field while satisfying this equation in many ways in this region. So that's a problem. That's the breakdown of determinism. Of course, it's known for ages. In region, let's say 4 here. Yeah. Now, what did people say about this in the early days? They said the following. I think this goes back to Penrose. So they said that maybe this is physically not relevant for the following reason. So now let's, to make this argument, I'm just going to draw this part of the space-time that's relevant for the argument. This and this and this. So now suppose you have two observers, Alice and Bob. And so Alice, this is the point at future infinity. It's sort of difficult. I mean, these diagrams, angles are accurate, but distances are very inaccurate. So really this point is at future infinity. It's sometimes called I plus, yeah, I for infinity. So Alice, it will take her an infinite amount of her proper time to reach this point, whereas B, who was foolish enough to dive into this black hole, will reach that point here at a finite proper time. So now why is that interesting, or what does that tell us anything? So now imagine that A sends light signals out to her boyfriend periodically, like this. Then, you know, every 3 seconds, or I don't know, I don't know who would like such a girlfriend sending messages every 3 seconds, but let's say every day. And so now, of course, she will send it every day. She has an infinite amount of time to send her messages, but he will reach this point beyond which no messages can reach him at a finite time. So obviously, these messages will start piling up in his phone more and more frequently. And therefore, that's called the blue shift phenomenon. Now, really, what you should think of is that you have a field here with a, you know, a wave profile like this. And if you propagate this field into this region, then a field that has a constant frequency here will have a kind of a chirp. Frequency will go up for here. And therefore, such a field, while its amplitude will not do anything spectacular, the frequency of such a field, so if this there be some sort of nice coordinate there, then the frequency of this field will go to infinity as you approach this so-called Cauchy horizon. Now, the problem, or why this is good, is because, of course, you know the flux of the field, that would be the VV component of the stress tensor. And for this simple massless theory, this is just VV squared. And therefore, the flux of this field will be infinite. And therefore, you can't really trust this picture because the stress tensor will back react onto the metric. So this is, so in a slightly different way. So Israel and Poisson call this a mass inflation. So remember each point here is really a sphere. Yeah, so you could say, what's the mass inside such a sphere here? There's a known, let's call this sphere SR here, the mass inside such a sphere. So now in general relativity, you know, mass is a little problematic, but there are settings where you can completely unambiguously define this. It's called the Hawking mass. And then this mass inside, just using this kind of behavior. So if you say this goes like the inverse, this goes to maybe like some power, let's say just go to infinity. So specific at this point, then this mass would go like something like some power here. R minus is the R coordinate defining this horizon. Yeah. So R is a time-like coordinate in this sphere. But you don't have to be confused about R being a time. There's nothing fundamental about R being a time-like coordinate. It's just you're so used to call R a space-like coordinate. There's nothing problem. Okay, so you say that this mass goes up, but the angular momentum or the charge, if you have a charged field, it does not go up. It just remains constant. It cannot be carried away by radially, let's say if you take a spherically symmetric perturbation, and therefore you conclude somehow that the charge inside such a sphere divided by the mass goes to zero. And if you have if you think of back reaction, this is your charge, this is your mass, then this, you know, charge per mass goes to zero. So basically, you're going back, if you extrapolate, you're going back to the original Schwarzschild singularity here, where there was no problem. I mean, you have to write down the full solution to the Einstein equation. It's just a suggestive argument. This is called the mass inflation. So the mass inflation, in a sense, solves this problem. There's no reality to this diagram. The slightest perturbation is going to catastrophically destroy it and revert it to such a diagram where there is no issue with determinism. So this conjecture that this sort of really always happens, I mean, you would really have to solve the full Einstein equations rather than this very simple-minded wave equation, that's called a strong cosmic censorship conjecture. Yeah, so cosmic censor is, you're probably mostly from free countries, but in the old days there were censors that you had to submit anything you write, like the censors on the archive sometimes. If you write a naughty paper, you got them upset and they might block you. So there's a cosmic censor who kind of blocks these things. That's the idea. Now, that's an old stuff. I mean, Israel Poisson is 89, I think. These ideas are not at all new. Okay, but what's new? Was still not so new. Now let's become a little more general even. And let's do the Reisner Nord Stream de Sitter, where you say you're not solving the Einstein equations, Einstein-Maxwell, but now you add a cosmological constant. So what that means is that simply the function f becomes, it is for Schwarzschild, it's for Reisner Nord Stream, and then it's minus lambda r squared over 3. So that this, the cosmological constant is a positive cosmological constant. And now the way in this picture now changes is like this. So it's not too different. If you're familiar with reading these Penrose diagrams, then that's fine. It's just that the infinity, which is a null kind of surface in this de Sitter case, becomes a spice-like surface. It doesn't really matter for this. But there's an interesting point. It's not this. So again, you have here your Cauchy horizon minus, you have your event horizon. This is the exterior of the black hole. And you have the same problem. If someone bold enough to jump into the black hole, he will fall into the region where you have indeterminism. Now, of course, you can you have the same Lewshifter's pile-up effect as you had before, but you have another effect, which is due to this positive cosmological constant. You know that the de Sitter space, if you just didn't have a black hole, just the de Sitter space expands exponentially. So you have exponentially more space. So therefore, the amplitude of the field will go down exponentially. So now you have this, on the one hand here, this exponential pileup, but the field that sends the message is that the amplitude goes exponentially down. So you have a competing effect. Between the blue shift that I described in this example with Alice and her boyfriend, and you have what is often in cosmology called a red shift from lambda. What that just means is that the amplitude of a field here likes to go down exponentially, whereas the frequency measured here goes up exponentially. So now if you form some quantity which measures the derivative of a field, which starts out nice and unproblematic here, that will no longer be so bad, really. And in fact, you can prove mathematically now that it goes with as 1 minus alpha over kappa minus. Now, V is the coordinate that defines this horizon. So V equal to 0 is where this horizon is. And this is divergent function, can be divergent or convergent. So alpha is what is called the spectral gap. And kappa minus is the surface gravity of this Cauchy horizon. So what's the spectral gap? The spectral gap is, I'm not going to technically define it, but you have in these de Sitter-like spaces, you have something called quasi-normal modes. They are resonances. So they are solutions with a complex frequency. And the imaginary part of this complex frequency will determine the fall-off, this redshift. And obviously, the smallest such imaginary part will give the slowest decay. And that's the alpha. And so it's a quantity you can determine numerically. And in fact, people have done this. So now this is work by super high-powered mathematicians in Svarzi in 15. So they use the full arsenal of top-class analysis to prove this. What you can do to really see how divergent this is, you can determine alpha. So you need numerics. And indeed, people have seen that this alpha can be fairly large, and it can be so large that you do not have at all a divergence here, because this is one minus something. And that means what I said, that the perturbation becomes so singular here that it will destroy the validity of this diagram, that no longer happens.
Can I just ask, alpha is independent of the initial data?
Alpha is just dependent on the parameters of the black hole, M, Q, and lambda.
Okay.
It's just like a spectral gap for resonance.
It's the least rapidly decaying
quasi-normal bound. It's the imaginary part of the least rapidly
independent of initial data.
Independent. So the statement is not all that this is always. So more precisely, there are certain ranges of this QM such that this. And this very interesting.
How can you describe qualitatively the range where?
It's, for example, one such range is when this becomes a near extremal. So the near extremal at finite lambda, for example, would be such a range. So this this numerics has been done by Cardoso et al. In I think 17 or 18. I don't know. Anyways, this for Reis and Nordström. But I should say for Kerr, you have this exact same phenomenon, but it will take much more chalk to write down the metrics. And now, so people have, so this really says this problem is there. These black holes, you cannot discard them as unphysical. There is a cosmological constant. Okay, whether these nearly extreme black holes exist or not in nature, that's perhaps debatable. But clearly, it's a relevant problem. You cannot say this is exotic physics or this is just made up. Astrophysical black holes are described by the Kerr-Newman, by the Kerr family. That's the theorem of general relativity, famous theorem of Hawking and others. And so you must take this seriously. Now, there are different views on this. So I'm interested in the question whether perhaps, so this is all I should say, this is all classical field equations. Nothing is quantized whatsoever. So I'm interested in the question whether quantum effects Now, what do I mean by this? Quantum effects. Of course, in this audience, there are so many different views of what you should quantize, what are quantum effects. So one thing you have to see here is what this is telling you is that the field, and if you think of this as a substitute for the metric perturbation, I mean the full perturbation of the Einstein equations, of course much more complicated, but still a wave equation, it's trying to tell you that in this regime the perturbation is still small in any reasonable sense. So there's no reason why you should not treat this field as a small quantized perturbation of this classical background. It's physically completely okay to do that. And so so you can just say you try to consider quantized field on this Reisner-Nordström de Sitter space-time. And that should be completely appropriate. Of course, everyone knows you're going to have to use quantum gravity, but nobody knows how to do that, at least in order to answer this kind of question. And it's still an interesting issue. So what would you like to compute? So let me go back to what you really say in the classical case. So in the classical case, you really say that if I take a Cauchy surface like this, and if I put nice initial data here, so you don't want to start with an initial datum that already has some shock or some pathological behavior. You want to understand how it may develop something there. So you start putting a nice initial data. So the initial data, as I said, you know, that's phi and phi dot on sigma. And you want to, and they have proven that if you put such kind of nice initial data, then the field, okay, so they are mathematicians. They don't write these kind of signs like this. So they give you a kind of a regularity in some Sobolev space, blah, blah, blah. But it is what this is. Yeah? So they have shown that then the singularity can be no worse, at least, than this. So they're mathematicians. They're not actually solving, you know, numerically some equations, but they prove theorems. So that's what they do. So what you want to do in quantum theory is you want to say, now in quantum theory, let me draw again this picture. Yeah.
Somehow the physically with the going back to your the girlfriend and boyfriend example here. I mean, if the idea is that if the girlfriend is, you know, a co-moving observer moving away from the black hole into sitter, then her she's sending every 3 seconds according to her clock, then you're getting a redshift.
Yeah.
Eventually a divergent redshift in terms of how long it takes those guys to get to the hole, but then once they get in, they're getting
blue shifted again. That's correct.
Kind of could cancel out.
That's what this says. That's what this says exactly. So in this formula, kappa minus this—that's the surface gravity of this.
But somehow, isn't there also a girlfriend who's in orbit around the? I mean, do you have to worry about the fact that your girlfriend might be in orbit around the black hole, you know, bound to the black hole and sending signals?
In fact, you do have to worry about it. So and of course the mathematicians did worry about it. Of course, it's a complicated problem. So you have, I think, what you're saying is that you have, as you know, around the Schwarzschild black hole, you can have nudgeodesics that go around and around and around. They never leave this light ring or photon sphere. And now such trapped geodesics, if you translate this by, let's say, heuristically with a WKB approximation into the behavior of a field, such a field would not decay very much because it remains. But it's the point is this photon sphere around a black hole is a unstable manifold. So if you have a geodesic that deviates the slightest from this sphere, it'll go exponentially away from it. Yeah? So in the mathematician's term, in mechanics, the unstable manifold direction is exponentially unstable. So you have a negative Lyapunov exponent. So this is there's a lot of work going in to showing that this effect does not really in the end change.
So this would be
a high frequency effect anyway. So it's massless or massive field.
In other words, we could actually be an honest to God, assuming your girlfriend is massive, she could be an honest to God circular orbit, stable circular orbit.
Yeah, but that's kind of irrelevant because for this high frequency behavior, only the characteristics of the equations are relevant, which are the null geodesics. Yeah, so the singularities always go along the null geodesics. So the girlfriend is really, it's not a material, the girlfriend and the boy, the Alice is just a proxy for the field, how the field, I just said that. So in order that, you know, you think of her as like a particle. I just said that to make it easier to understand, but really I'm talking about a field which has a nice frequency here, and how that field, you know, when propagated forwards would look here. And that field, if you decompose it in modes, there would be modes that go along these trapped geodesics, but those modes, they in the end don't matter, don't change anything.
But I mean, this model of the person outside emitting pulses doesn't really work in the Dissiter case because some of the pulses weren't ever seen by.
That's correct. That's also correct. So this is, of course, just a two-dimensional projection. And it's not really true. I mean, it's only the radial geodesics that look like 45-degree lines.
Yes.
These are all things that, of course, that are taken care of.
Yes.
But in the end, somehow, for this dangerous phenomenon, it's always the radial in some. But of course, you need to prove all this, which these people, I understand, have done. Okay. So, but now I want to talk. I was saying that really, it's a. The setup is you put something nice initially and you see how it behaves finally. And so now you have to say in the quantum theory what you mean by you put a nice initial state. What's a nice initial state? And now I need to talk about that. So the basic idea is that you would like now, so you're talking about a quantum field. So what you have to prescribe is the quantum state of the system at an initial time. Think about the Schrödinger, think about the wave equation as the Schrödinger equation. And now, so we need to prescribe a nice see at this initial surface or at this initial surface, it doesn't really matter which is the one is as good as the other. And then you want to say, then you want to look at the expected operator, TVV, in this state near this Cauchy horizon. Yeah, so of course, if you put in a singular state, nobody will be surprised that this thing is going to do something bad eventually, but you want to start with a nice state. Now you would say, for example, you want to start with the vacuum state here. Now in a curved space, it's not so clear what's really the vacuum, and we're claiming, however, the following. Let me just say what our claim is, and this has not come out as a paper, so I'm a bit cautious. So this is work with Wald and Zahn. We're claiming that this object always behaves like v to the minus 2 rather than. So this the classical behavior would be v to the minus 2 plus this. Kappa. So in the classical case, you have a minus 2, but it's better. And that was the competing effect. And we're claiming that generically, in the quantum theory, there's not it doesn't get better. Yeah.
Is
so
that the same as it was up here? Was that also?
Yeah. Well, here, yes. So here.
Different coordinates.
Yes. Yeah. I should have written this in different coordinates, indeed. So it would have still imply the mass inflation scenario. That's what I'm saying. Now, I guess I have just a few more minutes, Chairwoman?
Ten.
Okay. So, but our conclusion is that quantum theory saves well, in this context, yeah, inside black holes, yeah. The R and the Sutta. So I think this is a really nice thing that theories really that, you know, in the end we know, of course, that this quantum theory on this curved space is not the full theory. It's not quantum gravity, but it's a nice, a very nice internal consistency that somehow this phenomenon saves determinism.
So the claim is that the spectrograph just vanishes
in the... That it plays no role, yeah? So this would...
An intuitive way to understand that?
Let me talk about that a little bit. In fact, if you do a two-dimensional calculation, it's very easy to see. The basic point is... that so you have, you know, these are event horizons, so they have, you know, as you know, in this semi-classical quantum field theory in curved space-time, or horizons have a temperature, and the temperature is basically the surface gravity up to a factor, you know, 1 over 2 pi or something, and the point is they have a different temperature, and therefore if you think of very naively in terms of a state being populated by modes with a Boltzmann weight, the two states here and here are populated by different Boltzmann weights. And so they're different. That difference somehow always gives rise to a divergence, very roughly speaking. But I should say this is not a simple thing that you can do without an actual massive calculation. So this is... We're still working on this. But I want to say that this does not always have to be like that. So, for example, Diaz, Real, and Santos this year have looked at something called the BTZ black hole. One of this is the Teitelbaum that also likes to come to these conferences. And they have shown that if you put, so the BTZ black hole, you don't have to know what it is, but it's Penrose diagram. I mean, it's a slightly bizarre thing, really. But it also has a Cauchy horizon, and it has an event horizon. And you likewise look at the stress tensor here. This is now an ADS space-time, so it's got a different sign of the cosmological constant, and you can argue whether it's really a black hole at all. But they've analyzed this, and they find for the quantum stress tensor, if you put the put in here the so-called Hartle-Hawking state, you don't have to know what it is. It's some well-accepted state. Then the behavior here is really like the classical one. So it depends on having really this four-dimensional or two-dimensional situation rather than this a bit artificial black hole.
So when you say, so in their case, you do not see the mass inflation?
You do not, so here you don't have the spectral gap. Of course, everything is much simpler. You only have really the cosmological constant in this game, and some identification scale L. I mean, it's this BTZ black hole is just ADS space locally, but it has some strange identifications. And the period with which you make this identifications introduces a scale, and that's sort of something like the mass of the black hole. And it depends on what the value is of these things where, that comes. That replaces some numerology. Okay, so let me very briefly say how we think that we want to do this. You're doing this calculation. So it draws on technology from quantum field theory and curved space-time. So you put Is there a colored chalk? Perimeter Institute is so rich that they don't have a colored.
I'm sure it's
they have to save money somewhere, right? Anyway, so let me, I just got 5 minutes. That's not. So what we do is we define what's the nice. The main point is sort of what you decide is a nice state, and I claim a nice state. The nice states, the initial states. They are what is called the Hadamard. That's maybe a little bit of a technical thing, but what it means that in some sense it means that so initially, so that this was this initial surface where you start. Evolution, let's say. One way to say it for a particle physicist is that near sigma, the correlation functions of the state, so, you know, something like AB, X1, let's just take the field itself. They possess an OPE, operator product expansion. So you have at short distances the universal behavior of the dictated by the operator product expansion. Another way to say is that near sigma, you know, any renormalized composite. So about that, I mean something like you take n derivatives of phi and you know something like this, less than infinity. You just want to say that somehow near the surface you don't already start with something that's bad. Okay, let me not. This is a little technical, but then how we actually do the calculation is you really define such a state by putting here some positive frequency modes here on this surface, and you put some other positive frequency modes on this surface, which are such that the state has this nice property. So it's called the, this corresponds to in the literature called the, something like the Unruh state. So these are all very classical things, nothing particular new. And then you have to evolve the state up to here. So you use it's basically a scattering type thing where you have to compute various scattering matrix coefficients. You know, quantum mechanical. It all boils. If you reduce it to modes, it all boils down to quantum mechanical scattering in a radial potential, much like in quantum mechanics, and then you have to solve really a scattering problem, which is, and that's where it really gets a little technical. This kind of radial Schrödinger equation is not an equation which you can easily solve by your favorite hypergeometric function, because in the Rn de Sitter space it has four regular singular points. So this kind of Hoyne equations, and that's a series of hypergeometric functions. And so in the end, you have to do some numerics. But the argument is, which we haven't really completed, but the argument is going to be completely, is going to be just completely solid, because if you imagine just changing this function f here, just somewhere inside, smoothly by a little bit, there's no chance on earth if you allow that freedom, you must immediately get this kind of singularity that I described. And with this, I finish on time, I suppose, right? Yeah.
So many marks, perhaps. When you say determinism, you probably mean in a quantum mechanical sense, that's to say, a unitary evolution operator, or is it?
I mean it, first of all, just in the classical, classical wave equation, it just means that if I give you the initial data, you can construct a solution. In quantum mechanics, it would mean that if you know the correlate, you could say it the way you say it as well, but it, another way would be if you know all the correlation functions of your state down here, you're supposed to know them in the future as well.
But
you don't. This way, you don't have to talk about unitarity or not yet.
The other thing which I have emphasized in my talk, and you don't, is that I consider the time for the external observer very important. You have to realize that as time goes on for the external observer, inside things get squeezed. And,
So this is something I. Okay, so this is something I don't.
The problem is the exponential dependencies between internal and external observers. So the external time is reflected exponentially in the inside world, and these exponents often diverge.
So I could say, I think you could just, if you could just simply avoid this issue, because in a realistic space-time, with a gravitational collapse, you really only have. You're really only going to have that part of the Penrose diagram anyways. And so you don't really, you know, with a little bit here left, I mean, I shouldn't be drawn badly. And so you then have like a star in here, and you should put some boundary conditions on the star, but that doesn't matter whether the star is like a reflecting piece of metal or like a black thing. I think in this way you can
that you are ignoring the interactions between the particles themselves, and that is nearly always admitted in ordinary quantum field theory, except in this case if time goes on for the actual observer, then the particles going into the horizon can increase their momentum exponentially. And
yeah, but
at some point you can no longer ignore the gravitational self-interaction. You might decide to ignore it, but then you might not catch all the properties of a black hole, particularly for the outside observer.
What do you mean outside? The one an observer
outside,
like here outside
stays like you or me, outside of the black hole.
Yes. Well, I would just say you have this initial state, and if you propagate it with the star, I mean, I have to say I didn't quite fully appreciate your viewpoint, but I'm just here saying that you could, in principle, sidestep this issue, in my opinion, by putting a mirror here or a reflecting surface. So this outside really is not exist. This other wing of your butterfly is not really there.
Well, that depends on what kind of stage you're looking at. And I'm considering the black hole as itself as a quantum system, but for the external observer, which means that many of those regions that you draw inside, meaning that the inside has no connection anymore with the outside world, that has then become irrelevant to the outside world.
Well, I'm more taking the viewpoint that a horizon separating the inside and the outside is just a surface drawn in by a mathematician.
The observer in the outside world is also a mathematician.
The observer in the outside world is also a mathematician, but there may be people that are not mathematicians and more daring that decide to cross this surface drawn by the mathematician. And in the classical. So my starting point is maybe my framework is a little bit different from yours. I would maybe you could say like this, in the sense that I don't. The viewpoint here is that classically there is, I think, no disagreement between anybody how a wave equation propagates on a fixed background. I think you would also agree with that. And classically, people are just arguing that classically a field which starts out nice, you know, have with a cutoff in frequency, let's imagine as physicists, they start behaving suddenly. You hope that they behave badly here to save this mass inflation. That's all classically. But you see that it may not be the case. And then it's really a small classical perturbation. And my viewpoint is then to treat the quantum system. I still imagine this is a small quantum perturbation. I ask myself whether quantum mechanically I can still think of this as a small perturbation. And this result says that in some sense you cannot.
Yeah, one thing I don't quite see is
a discussion over the
the one thing is that the observer who's still inside the lab then can see the entire future of the outside world in a sense. That any message to the black hole, he will have at his disposal. So obviously that will diverge. Suppose it's the black hole has a lifetime of billions of years, and now and then something falls into the black hole. All that is collected in one single stop by the inside of the earth.
Well, I mean, that's what you're describing as basically the blue shift phenomenon, you know, that...
Just to interrupt briefly. So we meet again at 10 past 11, and we can continue discussing here or just have a coffee downstairs.
Well, I'd like to discuss, but we can end the session. Thanks, you, Chairman.
Yes. Thanks very much again for the talk.